Orle pues, Raza. Welcome to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, the Beto Man, and we have a very interesting, exciting guest, Mr. Rick Dominguez, screenwriter. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Orale. We're going to start off with your background. ¿De dónde son tus padres? Where are your parents from?
Both of them. My mom is from San Angelo, and my dad was from El Paso. And I know that because he used to mention El Paso all the time. He said, I'm going back to El Paso. Let's go. I say, Dad, you're kind of old. You know, he said, oh, I'm going to go see my friends. I said, Dad, I think most of your friends are dead. What? What the hell happened? Avalanche? Bubonic plague? No, Dad, they died of natural causes. You know, time goes on. But yeah. He's very romantic about El Paso.
Órale. And San Angelo is also in Texas, huh?
Yes.
All right. ¿Y cómo se llamaban? What was their names? Your mom and your dad.
Oh, my mom is named Teresa Dominguez. My dad is named, probably still is named, Antonio Dominguez.
All right. And you were born where?
I was born in L.A., in a very eclectic part of L.A. There's a very diverse neighborhood. There was a heavy Latino concentration and African-American and Asian. It was kind of like the deck of the Enterprise there because it was so many different varied people. But it was a great place to grow up.
All right. Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have Latinos. Every Latino has brothers and sisters. There's no such thing as Latino-only child. Finding that is like finding Bigfoot or something. But, I have my oldest brother is Tony, and then my next brother is Daniel, and my sister is Diane, and then I have another brother, David, and then best for last, me.
Órale, so you're the last one. All right.
They got it right, and they stopped.
Órale. And so tell me where you went to elementary school, junior high, and high school.
I started off in L.A., and I went to a small school called Norwood. And then we moved to the suburbs when I was about 10 years old, and it was a culture shock. It was all white kids, and that was in Whittier. And I stayed there through junior high, and I went to high school, went to Whittier High School, which is where they filmed Back to the Future. And then a lot of famous people. The year I got there was the year just prior to that. John Lasseter, who created Pixar, had just left. And so, of course, Nixon went there as well. So we have kind of diverse characters went to Whittier High School. But it was a great place to go, you know, Whittier Boulevard. And there was a stronger concentration of Latino community as years went on. So I wasn't so isolated anymore.
All right. So what year did you graduate high school, más o menos?
Exactly, 78. Right. It was because we had our big slogan, 78 is great, which was better than 79. They had 79 is great, and I think they just stole our slogan, and theirs didn't even rhyme, so ours was better.
Oh, good, good. All right. And so then, what did you plan to do after high school?
You know, I've always wanted to be a writer because I found out early in life I wasn't really good at anything else. So I just started writing, stories and whatnot. And I found out that, like, one thing I did was we had a really tough English teacher. And he would make you go and find quotes for famous authors and whatnot, and back up your arguments to different essays and things like that. And it was really hard to do. So I would just go and make up quotes from different people. And he would say, wow, the rest of the class, look at Rick. Rick has found the exact right quote to back up his argument from Samuel Clemens. I can't believe you did. I never heard of this quote, Rick. And so the fact that I was able to bluff him made me think, you know, maybe I have a future in fiction here.
All right, there it is. And so then, did you go to community college, university?
I did. I went to Rio Hondo College for like 6 years, community college. I just kept taking the same kind of classes over and over again. I met a really great writing professor named Bob Isley, who went on to be quite successful. He wrote like The Great Debaters with Denzel Washington. And he was just a real sympathetic guy, kind of guy who'd take you aside and really help you with your work. And so that helped me along. And then from there I went on and I started writing stuff and I entered contests and won competitions and things like that. And it just, you know, kept the ball rolling as far as me wanting to be a writer.
All right. So did you finish? Did you get your AA, AS?
No, they finally just said, get out. you've been here too long now. And so, so that was it. I did go like Cal State Fullerton and a couple of Cal States and take some more classes I thought were interesting. But getting a degree never really interests me in anything in any way because I figured I wanted to be a writer. So a degree in what? You know, just get life experience.
All right. So meanwhile, did you get married?
No, I just stayed happy my whole life.
Órale. That's better than miserable. But
that's right.
Órale. And how about kids?
No, I think I'm old fashioned. If I was going to have kids, I would get a wife first and have her raise them and do everything.
Órale.
So I said,
all right,
well, I'm a modern man. I said, I shouldn't do that. Well, I wouldn't have kids either.
Whatever works for that.
Yeah. My dog died, so it's a lonely life.
Oh, órale. All right. And what about career? Did you work meanwhile, or did you just concentrate on writing?
No, actually, I got a job. My first few jobs were sales, and I would use my writing background to kind of lie to customers about products. I said, gee, I probably shouldn't do that anymore. This washing machine is also a refrigerator. I said, no, I shouldn't do that. So that's what I did. I mean, jobs that were kind of people oriented, that required a lot of people skills. I just kind of gravitated towards those. So I took a job as I worked at Sears for like 8 years or something. And then my sister and I had a shoe company where we would actually go to people's homes and sell shoes. And that was really something different because we kind of pioneered that, shoe parties, they were called. And so that was something else I did. But it was all the jobs I've had have been very people oriented. I very few times I've had a job where I've worked sitting at a cubicle or something, and I just didn't like it.
All right. And did you hold any other jobs?
Not really. I mean, paperboy when I was very young, and I got fired from that pretty quickly because I delivered papers to the wrong people. So that's about it. That
right.
In sales, yeah.
Okay. And give me the atmosphere, más o menos, the scene in 1978 L.A.
Well, 78 in Whittier was, it was really kind of a changing time. I think every generation thinks that. The 60s probably has more of a claim to that than the 70s does. But, we were going from being very laid back, the whole kind of, still a hippie movement was going on, long hair, sandals, going into the 80s, which is going to be more techno punk rock. And, the internet was about to hit. So that was going to change the world forever. I think the last part of the 70s where I was growing up was really the last time the world was kind of a big place because it was hard to get instant information. There was no email. You couldn't go on the internet and talk to people and find things out. And it was pretty much, just kind of what your friends thought and rumors you heard and that sort of thing. And so it was the last, as I look back on it, it was the last time I think America was going to be a very, kind of one way respected, very big world, but a very small community because we were all about to be joined together by this thing called the internet. And I always remember that.
All right. And what about music? What type of music do you like?
You know, I loved Motown. That was always my favorite. I think the 60s, I've discussed this with people, that the 60s was the most diverse group of artists you'll ever find because, again, I think at that point, the world, we were starting to get an influx of product from the world, right? The British invasion, Motown, the Beach Boys, folk music, all that side of things. But for me personally, I just always liked Motown. I think growing up in L.A., I used to go to this small park called Toberman, and there was a huge black influence, and all you heard was Motown all the time, and so I loved it. But I also love the Chicano song sound, and something I've gotten back into listening to East L.A. Review. You know, you guys have so many wonderful old artists that really have been forgotten, so this is a great way to bring them back.
All right. And so then music, you didn't join a band or play instruments?
No, I stunk at everything. I mean, I could barely sing. So they say, hey, you know what? You go off somewhere and write. I said, okay, thanks. Right. I got encouragement. I took that as encouragement more than people getting being mean to me.
All right. So let's get into the writing. Now, specifically, what made you think about writing scripts and why?
You know what? I remember this, that I was waiting to go to driver's ed one time, and I forgotten my book, and so I was kind of bored, and I started thinking up stories, and the more I did it, the more I liked it, and so I just started writing stories from then on, and I would tell people stories, I'd write stories and show them to other people, and they always got a great response. So I said, I like to create my own world. I like to be in charge of developing characters and giving them a purpose and a journey and that sort of thing. And I think artistically, you invest some of yourself in what you write. So you, as you, even now I look back on things I've written a long time ago. I say, yeah, I was going through something at that point, or I was viewing life in a certain way. And I look back on the script and I say, yeah, this is representative of that, even though I may not have known it at the time. Now I think I'm more self-aware. But yeah, I think that's why people write. It's kind of a cathartic experience in that you're able to invest some of yourself or what you're going through or in your pieces.
And so what inspired you? I mean, was it a movie? Was it a particular scene somewhere?
My brother was a police officer, and my oldest brother Tony, and he had kind of a tough life because he was like the kind of son who had to help take care of his family a lot. And so at an early age, he became a cop. And, he would come home from a day of like fishing a dead body out of a river. He'd say, hey, Rick, let's go look at a movie. And so I'd go look at movies with him, and I just really enjoyed seeing them. Back in the day, we had something called The Fabulous 52, which was a movie they'd show every week on CBS, 52 weeks a year. And I really liked it. I thought this is what I want to do. I like the way I feel when I see movies. I like to be part of creating them.
So what's your favorite movie?
You know, that changes so often. It's like your favorite song. But one movie I really like is something kind of obscure called Joe Versus the Volcano. It's a Tom Hanks movie. And I think it's a quintessential movie about this guy who has problems in his life. And the volcano is a metaphor for having to go through something to achieve your happiness, face down something. And I think that has been really important in all of my writing. I love redemption stories. I love Christmas Carol because that's kind of the ultimate redemption story. And so those kind of stories I've always really gravitated towards. And the more I look at them, I think every story has some kind of redemption quality to it. The ones that are more overt, I think, are the ones that I like the most.
All right. So what are the main themes? Like, if I was to write a script, anybody out there was to write a script, what are like, we'll say, is there like seven key themes, or what are the major themes within a script that you have to have?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any, the hero's journey is something that people have always pointed to in terms of writing a script, and there's key steps in there, entering the cave and finding a mentor and things like that. And you can break it down that way. For me, I've gotten past that. What I do is I just sit down, I just start writing. I'll say, okay, fade in, drugstore. What's going to happen here? And I'll just start writing that way, because there's a real spontaneity to my writing as there is in life. I've got an overall general idea of what I want to write. And so I'll stick to that story, but basically I have a lot of fun writing it. And I think if you break things down too much, some people writers will write like what's known as a treatment, and then a synopsis, and then a beat sheet, and then they'll go to the moments within the moments. And to me, you've taken all the, it's like when you plan a trip and you plan like every single stop and you know how long you're going to spend at this IHOP and that sort of thing. It's like, well, you know, it's, what's the point of going on this trip now? You've kind of made it as boring as heck. So for me, I just start writing now. I don't really think about what needs to be in a script anymore. If at the end I like it, it's a good read, I think that's enough.
All right. How many scripts have you read? I mean, have you written?
I've written, well, for myself, I've written about seven scripts that I've personally written, but I've written on other people's works, and there's a lot of more than that. I'd say, some are just terrible. The last thing I wrote for television was one of the last things Tim Conway did, which was a pilot about him and Robert Wagner and another guy, older guys trying to, I think they're still trying to make it in Hollywood at their age. And it was really nice. I mean, it was a cute piece, and Tim was great to work with. But so I've done some work for hire. But of course, the stuff I love the most is writing my own work.
All right. How hard is it to break into the industry to sell your script? What's the process?
Well, when I break in, I'll tell you. I'll come back and give you another example. it's difficult, because as I've learned going on, is it's in the secret in life and in business, in Hollywood, I guess, is networking. You have to know people. There's people I've known who've come to me for advice and help who have far surpassed me. And it's just because, you know, they really put themselves out there, which is hard for a writer. A lot of writers are kind of solitary people. We don't really get out there much. If you're smart, you do. You meet the right people. You go to the right parties. You network with the right people. And then they say, hey, you know what? I need so-and-so for a job. And, you know, regardless of how good your work is, I feel very comfortable working with you. And again, this goes beyond writing. It could be anything. And so I think that any writer coming up now, I would give him that advice. Put yourself out there. Don't stay behind your keyboard all the time. It's just as important, if not more important, to meet people, because even the people you meet now who may not be very successful in the industry 5 years from now could be very successful. And you're their good friend. They know you. They're comfortable with you. And they'll give you a job.
All right. How much does a script sell for?
Well, I mean, the when I sell something, I'll tell you. No, when Well, if you're doing union, I mean, it's the base for price for a script is about $40,000 to buy it. But then there's you know, if you're rewriting fees, like $17,000, those are based just Writers Guild minimums. You can go up from there. But and if it's non-union, it can be, you know, I'll give you this Snickers bar for your script. Okay, I'll take it. I'm hungry. It could be that.
Right. Okay, so tell me about the union and the Writers Guild. I mean, what are these and how do you get into them?
Well, to get into the guild, you have to sell enough scripts or do enough work for companies that are signatory of the Writers Guild. And then you build up enough points and you're able to join the guild. And then they, of course, once you're in there, then you're insured certain minimums and certain protections and a Writers Guild health plan, that sort of thing.
All right, and so that's the same as a union, right?
Yeah, it's just a union. Writers Guild. You know, the Writers Guild is literally a union, okay. Like SAG.
All right, and so then any script, just give me a few elements of a script.
Well, I mean, for the scripts that I write, humor plays a huge part in it, okay. But you also have to have pathos. You have to balance that out with something. You can't, if it's just funny, then people don't have any reference point. And for me, I want people to laugh with the character, because it's kind of mean spirit to laugh at someone. You know, it's even Chaplin or Mr. Bean or anyone like that. They're in on the joke. It's their joke. So for me, that's an important element, balancing the two. You can write complete dramas, but those are harder to sell in Hollywood. You can write complete comedies, and those are kind of forgotten pretty quickly, even if it does get made. So I think for striking that balance, creating real characters, putting in real situations that are relatable, even if it's bigger than life, but something you can see happening, I think is the key to having a successful script and having a successful character.
All right. So break down pathos. So what does that mean?
Well, it's having sympathy for something. It's having an understanding of what this other character is going through, a sympathy.
All right. And so how many characters usually per script, you know, is there, yeah, and you know, like if you see Star Trek, right?
Right.
There's seven major characters,
right.
You know, the captain and the what is it, Spock and the doctor,
yeah.
Are
right.
Usually the first three, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And then you bring in all the other characters. So usually you have about seven.
Yeah, you've got a couple of leads, mm-hmm. And then you have all the supporting characters.
But is there a magical number, or is that
not really?
Is that
standard? It's just like enough. Like how many people in a band? You know, I guess you can have a full orchestra, or you can have just a solo performer. It's just as many people as you need to get your point across. Some films are very successful with just two people. You know, like The Room is a good example of people, just a couple of people in a room. Or you can have, you know, whatever you need to tell your particular story. So there's no real hard and fast rule there.
Okay. And when you write a script, do you do this overnight? Do you do it over a 6-month period, a year? How do you know when a script is done?
Well, I think it's something a script you can work on forever, really. At some point, you have to just let it go. I think it's right now. If you know, it's like when a painter paints something. One more, I can keep painting, but one more stroke will just kind of ruin this thing and kind of take it backwards a bit. So for me, I write fast. I mean, I say I'm going to write 10 pages today and 10 pages tomorrow until I finish this. Have the first draft. And then I'll go back and I'll update it. I'll change it. For me, it's pretty quick. And then it's funny because when I do work for hire, I'll bring back the script in a few weeks. They'll say, hey, we're paying you for 2 weeks' work. Come on. I say, okay, well, I can hang on to it for 2 months if you want to, but it won't get any better. It's done. It's where it needs to be. So I think people work at a different speed. Most people, writers, would take, about probably several months to 6 months to write something. But for me, it's probably, 6 weeks.
Okay. So the minimum is how many pages?
For a screenplay, you want to be at least 90 pages.
90?
Yeah. 90 to 120 pages is about as long as you want to go, because they want to get so many screenings in per day. And if it's longer, then, unless it's Avengers or something, if it's longer, then it cuts down how many screenings of your film they can show per day.
Okay, is that single spaced or double spaced?
Well, screenwriting is a little different. It's the narrative goes all the way across the page, and then the dialogue goes down the center of the page.
Okay, so well, it's good that you're explaining it, because again, we're audio, and if you can't see it, it's a little harder for
that's true. Yeah,
for people to
I'm read. Drawing it out, but I get holding up to the microphone, but it doesn't do any good.
Exactly. All right. So now your latest writing is called what?
It's called Carlos Through the Tall Grass, and it's a story about this brilliant young Latino kid who can't decide whether he should go to college because of all the kind of crazy, felonious people in his life who he thinks depend on him, like his best friend Rhonda, who's this kind of quirky outcast who can't get into college anywhere. So every time we see her, she's dressed as something different, like firefighter, roller derby queen, lounge singer, trying to get inspiration as to where her career lies. Problem is, she's terrible at everything. That is, he has a really hot girlfriend who he knows is going to leave him the second he leaves. And he has an uncle, kind of a crazy Uncle Memo, who knows that Carlos, one of the problems in his deciding to leave is that he knows he's kind of afraid of leaving his comfort zone. So Memo tells him a story. He goes, hey, I ever tell you the story of Lupito Vargas? And Carlos says, I don't know, is he real or someone you made up? I don't know. Anyway, the point is, Lupito was a great baseball player, best in Bakersfield. And one day, someone told him a scout was coming and he should go try out. But Lupito, he said no. Carlos says, well, how come? He says, well, he thought, what if I'm not that good? What if I'm only Bakersfield good? All I got's baseball. You take that away, maybe I got nothing. And Carlos asks, okay, well, so what'd he do? He decided to try out. And what do you know? Halfway there, he got hit by a banana truck and died. And Carlos says, well, what the hell does that mean? He says, hey, you're going to college. You figure it out. So on top of everything else, he has to figure out this crazy riddle from his crazy uncle. And what I like is the metaphor of tall grass is that it's the unknown. It's something we have to go through oftentimes to find fulfillment and to find happiness. And I mentioned earlier, writing is kind of a cathartic experience. You leave kind of yourself in what you write. And for me, it's making this movie because I'm going to make this as a small film. And I am kind of going through my own tall grass. There's so many elements you have to pull together to make a movie. I start to think, well, you know, can I do this? And who am I to make a movie? But the good thing is that the script was reviewed by this website called Blacklist and got a fantastic response. Blacklist is the site that highlights the best unproduced screenplays. And my screenplay placed the second best family film and the fifth best comedy. And it's gotten a great response from people who've read it, and they've offered a lot of help. And also I look around at other movies and I say, well, that's terrible. So, you know, maybe making movies isn't as hard as I think.
Not really. All right. Now, the development of each character, let's say within any play, do you work at that or does it just come naturally?
You work at it until it comes naturally. So at this point in my life, hopefully I've gotten to the point where I know an honest character when I hear one. If I'm writing something, I say this. And when I first started writing, I'd write intentionally to go out of my way to incorporate something. And that wasn't organic. It has to be organic. So at this point, yeah, in my life, I know what I want to say, and I know how the character should say it. And I think that makes the character very relatable and very honest.
All right. And so to go across cultures and languages, what's the best approach? You know, we talk about diversity, tolerance,
right,
multiculturalism, inclusivity, quality, all of these good words, right?
Right.
But how do you put that on a page?
Well, you know, we're still trying to do that in the Latino community. I mean, so many other communities have been very successful. The African American community is a good example. They do so many projects that are, you know, dramatic and funny and all kinds of things. And in the Latino community, we really haven't had that success yet, or even that opportunity. You know, latest project La Llorona was just a horror, and then El Chicano was kind of more action. And so a lot of Latino films you see are going to be drugs, gangs, and that sort of thing. So Carlos is different because it is something that's very life-affirming for characters, and it's very positive, and there's no guns, there's no violence. It was the second-best family film. So hopefully by doing this, I'm going to bridge a gap and create a film that's something that's very family friendly, and it will be a start of a whole movement, probably within the not only Latino community but the Hollywood community.
All right, so this project called Carlos Through the Long
Tall Carlos Grass. Through the Tall Grass, and through is THROUGH. He's going through. He's not throwing. Hey, Carlos, stop throwing your grass at me. It's like he's going through the grass. Carlos Through the Tall Grass.
All right, so how long does it take for you to write this particular script?
This particular one took about 3 months from the time I started to the time I finished, because I had a good grasp of what I wanted to say. And so, you know, I think when you hit a zone like that, you're lucky, because things just tend to flow through.
Okay. So now you're working on a movie, right?
I'm working on this one. I'm working on getting this one produced, yes.
Okay. So are you also thinking in advance, like, who's going to play, you know, Memo? Who's going to play Carlos? Who's going to play, or who would you like?
Well, you know, in this particular film, the budget is such that it's going to be a non-union film. So I'm hoping to discover a lot of great new talent for this project, and see a lot of, there's so much undiscovered talent, especially in the Latino community, that I just want to see everyone, because there are a couple of real breakout star-making roles that I would I think some actors are going to just kill with, and they're going to be great, and it's going to create a whole career for them.
All right. And so writing a screenplay, where do you submit it? I mean, again, do you just go straight? Do you need what do they call them?
Parasites? Agent. Agents? No.
You already knew where I was going.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted an agent, was the gatekeeper between you and a studio. But now, I mean, of course, you can submit to festivals and competitions. That's great. But you can also just make it yourself. You know, the technology is such now. You can get your own camera. You can get people together. You can make a movie and submit it to film festivals. So if you have the wherewithal to make a movie, if you have the confidence in yourself to do it, hopefully the resources, then you can just get the whole thing done. Script again, just go to competition. You can get it to a lot of different people that way. But I would say at this point in your life, if it's a worthwhile project, just try making it. People have made movies on their iPhone that have been successful.
Wow. All right. And what about contacting somebody like Roberto Rodriguez and getting your script to him?
Yeah. Can you do it? That'd be great.
Well, I wish I could, but I can't.
You know, he's tough. There's a few people within the industry, Latino industry, who are made it and they're successful. And everyone, I think, just tries to get to them, and they're just overwhelmed. So even with the best of intentions, I doubt if they could do much for you. And plus, they want to do their own work. They really worked hard to do that. So I'm so sympathetic to that. But I mean, that's always a goal. But I think, like Robert did, he made his own project that was successful. And I think that you can do that. There's places to show your work. You can even get it on iTunes and Netflix and Amazon Prime and Google Plus. So I think that's more the route that people should take now, rather than, you can try to go into other people, but I would try making your own stuff.
All right. So where can people get a hold of you if they need to? Do you have a Twitter, Facebook?
Twitter, yeah.
Instagram? What do you got?
Well, I would go to my website at Carlos Through the Tall Grass. Again, carlosthroughthetallgrass.com. And I urge everyone to please go there, and you can learn all about the project. And this is very much grassroots. And I think there's a lot more stuff there, and it's an entertaining place to go.
All right. And any last comments for youngsters out there that want to write a script? What would you tell them?
I would say get a computer, because it's too hard to write by hand anymore. And, you know, just find your voice. Find your voice. What is unique about yourself? And write in that write that, because no one is you. And you're going to bring that to anything that you do as a writer, artist, painter, in life. So just when you work on finding your voice, and people work their whole lives to do that, even successful people do that. They never start developing as a human being. So find out who you are, find your passion, even outside of writing, and make it your career, and it'll never seem like work.
Órale, well, gracias for coming.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Órale. That's going to do it for us, Raza. We want to thank you all for tuning in to Chicano Highlights. You've been listening to The Beto Man and our interviewee here, Mr. Rick Dominguez, screenwriter. Hasta la próxima, ahí te guacho. Remember to tune in to Radio Aslan KUCR 88.3 FM every Friday night from 5:30 in the afternoon all the way through Saturday morning 7 a.m. Orale. Also tune in to my archive page at eastlareview.com. That's REVUE.com. Aitawasho. Hasta la próxima.